It's 1 o'clock. Turn up the radio. Listen up. Class is in session. Vinny Aceto is on the air.
Attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to be a part of the game. Join us on the sidelines with your host, a man who skies above the competition, covers every story, and hits a home run every show, Vinny Aceto.
That's me.
This is my final exam. Now y'all know who I am. Perfect son, but y'all be rocking when I'm done.
That's Jack Black from the School of Rock. Before that, Ernie Guarneri, former history teacher at the old alma mater, Abraham Lincoln High School. And before that, that was Danielle Maresca, who was an all-city third baseman for the James Madison softball team. Welcome to a very special edition of the award-winning On the Sidelines with Vinny Aceto, and today we take a time out from our usual wins and losses, fastballs, curveballs, jump balls, loose balls, basketballs, baseballs, footballs. For the full hour today, it's another edition of Vinny Aceto's book club. Now, if Oprah can have a book club, why can't On the Sidelines have a book club? And for the full hour today, we'll talk to my very good friend and the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. It's a quick read, it's a great read, and it's a very inspirational read, as the title of the story goes. And Jerry Del Priore will be here for the full hour. He's a freelance sports writer from Brooklyn who covers a variety of professional college and high school sports for a number of print and online publications. And at the age of 12, Del Priore developed juvenile diabetes, and he now lives an active and healthy lifestyle. In June of 1991, Del Priore earned his Bachelor's of Science degree in physical education from Brooklyn College. And over his professional career, Del Priore has worked with countless special needs children in a variety of recreational settings. And in addition to his professional life, Del Priore volunteers his time reading to children and assisting several prominent charities with fundraising events. Jerry Del Priore joins us here on the sidelines for the full hour. Jerry, thank you so much for being a part of our program.
Thank you for having me.
Jerry, putting this book together, Running Through Roadblocks, where you deal with so many people, prominent people that we've known in the professional ranks, like a Jim Eisenreich with 2 home runs in the World Series, who had Tourette's syndrome, and obviously everybody knows about Mike Utley with the Detroit Lions, and lesser known athletes. Why putting this together, Inspirational Stories, 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors? Why did you put this book together?
Well, Vinny, I got tired of hearing all the negative stories that the print media puts out, television, radio. You constantly hear about that, and I wanted to concentrate on the positive these athletes have done throughout their careers. And I felt it was important to highlight it. And, you know, you'll hear about it. You'll hear one story here, one story there. I felt that it needed more to be more publicized and to be put out there for the public to see that athletes do more than just play sports. They do, you know, other good things. And this was a great way to do it, not only on a local level, but this to get it out there nationally. And, you know, and this is what I concentrated on.
And it's so great to see, you know, we all idolize these athletes, whether younger or even at my age till today. I'm still idolizing some of these guys like Derek Jeter from the Yankees, who's quickly becoming one of my favorite Yankees of all time, quickly surpassing almost the Thurman Munson and Lou Piniella, who were my all-time favorite Yankees growing up as a kid. He's been unbelievable. They're real people, these athletes that you talk to. They're just not athletes. And we put them up on such a pedestal sometimes, Jerry, don't we? That, you know what, they have some of the ups and downs that we have as regular people, right?
True. And, you know, seem to not realize that. We think they're superhuman and not realizing they have families and, you know, they want to do the best they can, and some do better than others and some don't. And this was a way to show, like, the human side of an athlete, that they live everyday lives just like we do, but there's our times when something bad happens to them, and what happens from there on out.
Talk about now putting this whole process together, the whole genesis of running through roadblocks. From when you first had the idea, making it work, getting the athletes, choosing the 20 athletes that you're going to choose for this book, and then actually getting it and putting it in print.
Well, it's not an easy process, as you can imagine. From the get-go, I had a list of athletes I wanted to contact, and like someone you mentioned, Jim Eisenreich. I saw him play. I remember his story all so well, having Tourette's syndrome. And one thing you have to remember about it, when he was first exhibited symptoms, no one knew about Tourette's syndrome. It was not a well-known condition. And when he was first diagnosed with it, they didn't know much about it, and the doctors had to get his medication adjusted. And it wasn't until later in life that he was diagnosed with it. So he played with it throughout his young career, and it wasn't an easy thing for him. You know, people still didn't know about it, even when he was diagnosed with it. As you read in the book, players didn't know how to deal with it, his coaches, his family, and he didn't. Until, you know, he got his medication properly adjusted, and then, you know, he learned how to deal with it. He even retired midway through his career, and then when he came back, he was fine with it. His medication was fine. He was able to play in one World Series in 1993 with the Philadelphia Phillies, and then ultimately winning one in 1997 with the Florida Marlins, who was, you know, they were a very young team, and they defied the odds, and he played a big role in that series, hitting a big home run and helping them beat the Cleveland Indians.
Describe the process now. There's 20 in the book. How many people did you actually contact before writing the book? And I want to get back into Jim Eisenreich.
I contacted quite a few athletes. Early on, I had a great success rate, but it was tougher to find the ones I wanted to fill in the gaps. I wanted to not only have male athletes, I wanted to have female athletes. I thought that was important for young girls to see that there are athletes out there that are well-known, some not, but I wanted to give equal billing to each gender. And not everyone was always willing to tell this story, so that was something I had to find a solution to and overcome. But all in all, I think, you know, I know that all the athletes I interviewed were the ones that belonged in his book. And, you know, I know there are more out there that are willing to tell their story. It was, you know, it was difficult because I had to constantly write emails and wait for people to come back, get back to me. You know, you don't always deal directly with the athlete, so you're always dealing with different media outlets. And it's a difficult process, but it was, all in all, in the end, it was worth it.
You're on the sidelines with Vinny Acida, and we're talking to Jerry Del Priore, who's the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. It's a quick read. It's an outstanding read for inspirational stories about people who have gone through so many medical conditions and other problems going on in their lives. And Jerry brings out these stories out there for you, such as Jim Eisenreich, as we talked about, who I remember growing up as a kid watching him play for the Kansas City Royals, then, as you said, with the Phillies, and then winning a World Series eventually in 97 with the Florida Marlins. Tell us about the process of hooking up with Jim Eisenreich, and what was he like talking to?
Well, a lot of these athletes have their own foundations. So, obviously, being retired, it was a little easier. I didn't have to deal with, you know, the mass media. I didn't have to deal with, you know, a PR person. I just contacted the foundation. And lo and behold, they called me back, and they said, yes, we can set something up. He called me. We had a great interview. He's a very nice guy, very easy to deal with and more than willing to tell the story. It doesn't matter if it's told to the, you know, most popular reporter or someone like myself. At that time, I was just beginning to get my name out there. So, but yeah, it's you know, sometimes you have to start from the bottom and work your way up. And like you said, some athletes you will know and some you won't. But I wanted to get a range of athletes, and it's more about not the popularity of the athletes, it's about their story. Anyone can, you know, write a book about popular athletes.
Right, right.
You know, if I wanted to do that, I would have got popular athletes. But it wasn't only about that. It was about their story, about them overcoming insurmountable odds. It was about them showing people that, you know, maybe when something happens to you, it seems like it's the worst at the time, but later on in life, you'll realize that, you know, it wasn't that bad. And maybe that helped me, you know, it showed me to get to the level I am now. It made me stronger. And it's that old cliche, what doesn't kill you only makes you stronger.
Now talk more about this Jim Eisenreich. It just fascinates me with Jim. He was a very good player with Kansas City and then became a pinch hitter later on in his career like that. Describe some of the stories about now when he first was diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome and what was some of the reaction that he got from teammates? And other teams also, because from what I remember, he got teased a lot by a lot of people. He got heckled a lot.
There was one incident I write about in the book at Fenway Park, and everyone knows that the Boston fans are relentless.
Evil.
Yes.
They talk about us being the evil empire. They're evil out there.
You know, the taunting caused him, his twitching, which is part of Tourette's syndrome, his twitching to flare up beyond control, and he had to take himself out of the game because of that. And, you know, even though he had an answer to his problematic condition, it still wasn't easy. He still encountered many potholes. And it wasn't until, you know, he got his medication adjusted that the Royals picked him up off of waivers. And then he still went to, like, you know, he still went through a rusty time. It wasn't just, like, easy for him to get back into the game. It took him a few years, but then he had some great years with the Royals and with the Phillies and eventually with the Marlins. But he was a role player. And, you know, at one point, but he still had a pretty distinguished career. Winning World Series is not too shabby. I mean, being in two is not too bad. Many great players don't get that opportunity to win one. So he was fortunate to do that, and part of that was overcoming Tourette's syndrome and moving on from there.
People who know me know I'm a tremendous hockey fan. And one of the members of the book that you talk about, one of the inspirational stories of the 20 courageous athletes in running through roadblocks is Jim Kite, former defenseman with several teams in the National Hockey League. And Jim had a hearing problem. Talk about that, Jerry.
Well, he still does. He's hearing impaired. He was the first legally deaf hockey player to play in the NHL. He jumped from being drafted all the way to the Winnipeg Jets. From that, he was born with a condition that degenerated his auditory nerve, and then he lost his, you know, he gradually lost his hearing. And he played in the juniors with an apparatus. Back then, they didn't have the technology they do now for hearing aids. And he played with this big thing, like this apparatus that was very visible. And, you know, there was one play that called him Radio Shack because he had wires that inserted into his ears.
People are so evil, aren't they?
especially children. You know, they tell you what they feel, and, you know.
Well, they don't know any better.
You would think adults would know any better, but, you know, it's the world of sports. They want to get anything that gives them the upper hand, and obviously that's something that sticks out, you know, thought that can get into his psyche, and teasing and is one big thing in sports, and they go to another level,
right?
Obviously.
But how did he handle that?
Didn't seem to faze him. He was a tough guy, so I guess one way he would handle that was dropping the gloves when he needed to.
And you didn't want to mess with him when he wanted to drop the gloves, right?
No, no. Back then, you know, they're much bigger now, obviously, but being 6'6 and 220, it's not something you want to deal with, especially, you know, someone of his nature. On the ice, he was, you know, he was an enforcer, he was a tough guy, whatever terminology you want to use. Off the ice, he was one of the nicest guys you want to deal with. And I found that out. He was very, very accommodating. He's a great guy. You know, being hearing impaired is one thing, but being a great guy that he is another. And he displayed that. He ran his own hockey program for hearing impaired children in Ottawa, and that's something he did for 8 years. So he wanted to give back. He wanted to show that, you know, that you know, just because you're hearing impaired doesn't mean you can't play any type of sport. You know, hearing impaired is one thing, but being athletic shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't block you from enjoying any type of sport.
I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to ask you also now, bring back Jim Eisenreich in the same realm here with Jim Kite. Talk about when you say give back, how do they deal with talking to the younger people out there who have the same afflictions that they do, the same people who have Tourette's syndrome, the same people who are hearing impaired? How do they deal with that with those young athletes?
Well, to the general public, what many people may see as an obstacle is more of to fuel them into a career. So what we would see as something as that is a weakness is not to them. So they would use that, and someone who has that, they want to show them that it's not. It's just something, for lack of a better word, you know, people use a disability. But to them, it's more of a challenge, something they can overcome. And that's what they did. And they, you know, he was able to show that you have this, it shouldn't stop you. And to have something like that gives them the opportunity to show that, listen, you see me, you can be the next person. You can reach the NHL. You can reach Major League Baseball. You can reach the NBA. It doesn't matter. You know, as long as you believe you can do it, you can. And he was, you know, Jim Kite, Jim Eisenreich, those are two shining examples of how to overcome something and to reach your full potential, regardless of what people think. You can't.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Never give up. It's not just a rallying cry, but everyday philosophy for 20 heroic athletes. Jerry Del Priore chronicles the trials and tribulations of these warrior athletes who inspire through optimism in the face of life-changing adversity. These indomitable spirits have battled life's greatest challenges to show the world that winning doesn't always mean getting across the finish line first. Don't go away. The award-winning On the Sidelines with Vinny Aceto continues as we talk to Jerry Del Priore, the author of Running Through Roadblocks, inspirational stories of 20 courageous athletic warriors.
This is WNYE New York.
Dear Dad,
now it is possible to send an e-card to someone special in the military or a veteran for free.
I hurt my leg riding my bike.
Just log on to thankyouveterans.org.
Got you a gift for your birthday.
And write a personal message.
Except we can play catch for me.
Let someone you know how much you care. Visit thankyouveterans.org. A public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hey, I'm Larry King, and you're listening to the award-winning On the Sidelines with Vinny Aceto on WNYE 91.5 FM, your ticket to high school sports in New York.
In New York. Brooklyn's own, Lafayette's own. Larry King. He's funny. When I met him at Keyspan Park, hey to yourself. When I met him at Keyspan Park and told him that I went to Lincoln High School, he said, I shouldn't talk to you. Because Lincoln and Lafayette back in the day were big arch rivals. Today, for the full hour, it's now our regular On the Sidelines program. It's On the Sidelines Book Club. And for the full hour, we're talking to Jerry Del Priore, the author of Running Through Roadblocks, inspirational stories of 20 courageous athletic warriors. And if you miss any part of this show or others in the past, you can catch us on the internet now. That's right. We're happy to announce that New York Radio's only comprehensive program covering the high school sports scene is going podcast. Again, so if you miss any part of this show or others in the past, you can catch us on the NPR podcast directory, and you can go there on npr.org, or you can check us out on nyc.gov/radio. You can even catch us using your preferred podcasting tool, like my good friend Elio Velez from The Wave in Queens and the New York Daily News, who subscribes to us via iTunes. So we're going big time here. We're going major league here on the sidelines. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Again, Jerry Del Priore is here for the full hour. It's Running Through Roadblocks, inspirational stories of 20 courageous athletic warriors. Included among the 20 amazing athletes in this book is the former Detroit Lions offensive guard we talked about earlier, Mike Utley, who didn't give up after a collision on the football field, which left him paralyzed from the chest down. Talk about hooking up with Mike Utley and give us that situation with him.
Well, Mike has his own foundation, and that's how I contacted him, and he was more than willing, and he was very upfront about his condition and all the things that happened since that day in November 1991. Mike is a great guy, and, you know, he's very much involved with his foundation, which is instrumental in trying to find a cure for paralysis, you know, and spinal cord injuries. And he suffered, you know, a serious injury that could have killed him, but it didn't, and it's made him very strong physically and mentally. And since that day, his focus has been getting back to the point of injury and walking off on his own accord, walking off the field. Since he was injured in 1991, it's been, you know, it was touch and go for a while, but now his foundation concentrates on, you know, raising money and awareness, and hopefully one day there'll be a cure for paralysis. Now, his foundation focuses on people with spinal cord injuries and improving the quality of their lives. So he's been working, spreading the message that, you know, when you get hurt, it's up to you now to participate in a vigorous rehab program and get out there and be productive physically, enjoy your life, improving the quality of your life, which is something that's up to you.
Did he talk about the play that injured him?
Yes, it was, you know, it's something that can happen to anyone. It was a simple pass play that their offense ran all the time. He went back pass blocking mode, and the defensive player just caught him right. He was off balance, and he wound up landing hard on the turf, ramming his head into the turf. And it was something that doesn't happen a lot, obviously, but it was one of these freak plays. And he talked about, like, going through it and, you know, what was going through his head, and will he, obviously he wasn't able to play football again, but will he ever lead a productive life again from there? And the doctors were very negative about it. They told him that he probably won't, walking was out of the question, doing anything, you know, productive was out of the question, but he never gave up. He participated, and he, to this day, still participates in a vigorous exercise program to get him back, to help him gain some of his functions back. It took him 5 years, but he was finally able to have some movement in his extremities. And from there, he knew that, you know, he needed to continue and he needed to do more. It just gave him that inspiration. It gave him that motivation to even step up his rehab program even more. And now to this day, now he's gotten more feelings back. He needs to keep continuing it, but it's not only him. They need more scientific breakthroughs. And there's, you know, a lot of stem cell research is a big part of that. But there needs to be more scientific breakthroughs to get him and people like him to the next level so they can regain mobility, hopefully walk again. It's a big process. But part of it is participating in daily activities to regain that.
Jerry, when you talk to some of these athletes in the book here, Running Through Roadblocks, talk about how the family participates with these athletes also and how important they are to them.
Well, obviously they need, you know, you need that support to tell the unit, to help you get through something, a traumatic life-altering event such as being paralyzed or developing cancer. And it's always good to have a family network to deal, you know, to help you realize that, you know, you're not alone. We're in this together, and that's, you need a family support group to do that. Many of the athletes mentioned if it wasn't for their family, they're not sure how they would have dealt with this. Being told that you have cancer is traumatic enough, but
right.
You know, imagine not having a family to deal with it, or not having friends, not only family, or not having other, you know, it's good to know that you're not alone, that there are other people that have gone through it, are going through it, and will continue to go through it. But to have that support is so instrumental in your recovery, and just, like, it gives you strength, inner strength, it gives you...
It really is important to have that support staff, because they are a foundation for you in getting better, correct?
Correct. And there was one particular person that suffered a spinal cord injury. He was a former amateur surfer. His name is Jesse Belauer. And he talks about just, like, having my family and having close friends there, to knowing that they love me and they support me, got me through that. And in any type of situation, any type of traumatic situation, you can. It's always important to know that you have someone to lean on, whether it's your family, friends, your community. It's always important to know that you have someone to turn, you know, someone to turn to in that traumatic time in your life. Even something simple or not as devastating as developing cancer or diabetes. I personally know, if it wasn't for my family, when I developed diabetes, I wouldn't have been able to go through it. I was only 12. So you need that type of support network to help you grow as a person and help you deal with these things.
You're on the sidelines with Vinny Acido, and we're talking to Jerry Del Priore, who's the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. Jerry is also a freelance sports writer from Brooklyn who covers a variety of professional college and high school sports for a number of print and online publications. I met him a couple of years ago here, and someone that we both have covered with the Brooklyn Cyclones, Joe Giannetti, is also mentioned in this book also. Jerry, he expected to go in the first 10 rounds of the 2000 Major League Baseball draft, and that never occurred. The Mets eventually picked him in the 40th round, and Giannetti knows why teams were gun-shy about him on draft day, Jerry. He said because he had diabetes, and that scared people away, and that's really unfortunate. I can't believe something like that. He said after the Colorado Rockies found out about his condition, they backed off, and other teams lost interest in him also, and he was lucky enough to be drafted by the Mets and then started his professional career with the Brooklyn Cyclones.
Well, you know how hard it is to make it in any sport at the professional level. The guys you play with growing up were good, but you need to be even better. And even when you play, like, single-A ball, these guys, if you played with them, you would realize how talented they are. So when you have something like diabetes, people kind of shy away. They don't want to invest their money because that's what they're doing. When you get drafted, they're investing their time, their money, and it's kind of like, you know, well, do I want to develop this player? Do I want to put in the time? Do I want these coaches working with him? And it's sort of like, well, I'm not sure. But now there's so many advances in diabetes and other conditions similar to that, that it's okay, you know. And that's why, you know, these athletes want to tell them, like, if you manage yourself, you manage your health and your diabetes, it's not as traumatic as people would think. Maybe it's the lack of, you know, education and knowledge coming from these organizations that would make them a little gun-shy to draft someone such as Joe Giannetti or any other player. There's been other high-level athletes that went on to play in the NHL. For instance, Bobby Clark, former Philadelphia Flyers, great.
Oh, Broad Street Bullies. I hated the Flyers when I was a kid.
He had a great career as, you know, as a hockey player. And
he was evil.
Yes. But, you know, it's one of the things is lack of knowledge and lack of education in that area, you know, that would kind of not want have someone on that team, not draft them or have them play for your team. And that's something that needs to be, it's only a condition. They can get through it. It's up to the player to manage that particular aspect of their life. But it shouldn't stop an organization from drafting someone or, you know, giving that person a tryout. So it's just like, is this player able to handle the rigors of a long season in any sport? Baseball in particular is very, very long.
Oh, yes.
Maybe in my opinion it's a little too long. But
really? Not enough for me.
I mean, no. as a fan, I love baseball. I can watch it 365 days a year.
If not more for me.
Yeah. But it's a long season, you know, from the perspective of a player, and it's tough to get through the season totally healthy. If you have something, some type of condition that could hinder your ability to play, then it's something I can see why an organization would think twice about drafting someone. However, it shouldn't stop them. I mean, you should really give this person a look and see. If they are talented, it doesn't really matter what they have. If they can play, they can play. That's the final thing. And that's, you know, that's something he talked about. If you don't manage it, it's almost impossible, like, to have a successful professional baseball career or any other career in sports.
Now, you talked about earlier in the interview that you wanted to get the females also mentioned in this book, give them equal billing. And let's talk about one. Let's talk about Molly McMaster, who never let a little thing like colon cancer stop her from playing amateur and professional ice hockey.
She's a great hockey player, and having something like colon cancer is unthinkable for some people, but she actually even played during her treatment. So she got to her goal is now to educate people, to get them screened and have that knowledge that, you know, this can happen to anyone, because she was diagnosed at 23. Now, at 23, the last thing you're thinking about is like, oh, I'm not going to get colon cancer. I'm too young for that. Why do I even should bother getting myself screened? But she's got her own foundation called the Colon Club, and it's dedicated to educating people that you can get it. It doesn't matter what age, what race, it can strike at any time. And that's her goal, to do that. And she used hockey as a vehicle to educate the masses.
Talk about how sometimes when they first get diagnosed with whatever malady that they have, especially now we're talking about Molly McMaster. She was angry when she was first diagnosed, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, because she was misdiagnosed. The doctor didn't ask the right questions that could have diagnosed it early and made her treatment less invasive, for lack of a better word. And, you know, all the doctor would have to ask is, does anyone have in your family had polyps? And her mother had polyps in her early 30s. And that's something doctors should know about. But they're only human as well, I guess. But what are you going to do about something like that? But, you know, her goal is to educate the person. And when you go for a colonoscopy, maybe the doctor doesn't ask you the question, but you can offer that information,
right,
knowing that
right
already. And that could save your life. A simple thing like that. And that's her goal, is to save lives. And there's one particular, in her story, she talks about telling this gentleman in upstate New York, because she does all these great things. She was on the Jimmy Kimmel show talking about colon cancer awareness and all this. And her advice told him that, you know, maybe you should get this checked out, save this life. And he went and told her that, you know, it was a neighbor of hers. And, you know, that simple information saved a life. And that life, you know, don't extends out. You don't know how many people, other people that can benefit from knowing that information, and how many lives it can save, and how much it extends out to the community.
And she got a chance to play professionally against men. Tell us about that story that she told you.
Well, she got a chance to play for 14 different teams on the minor league level, to play a shift or two against men. And granted, she's a great hockey player, but playing against men,
it's a different level.
It's a different level, and she did really, really well. And, you know, it's an experience that she cannot be grateful enough. She always wanted to play, or at least try out for the U.S. women's hockey team. And you know how successful we have been in that area.
Yes.
But she said playing in men's professional hockey trumps that big time. And she was just like, it was like so over the top, such a gratifying experience that she can never really put into words. But thankfully she did, because I wouldn't have anything to write about if she didn't.
Let's talk about Christine Galan. When did you meet her, and what was her situation?
Christine, she may not be like one of these high-level athletes,
right,
but she was the first person in Western United States to receive a heart and liver transplant. And she was within hours of dying if she didn't get that. And, you know, she talks about how important it is to sign the back of your driver's license if you're healthy enough to give organs, you know, obviously when that day comes. Many people don't like to think about it, but she was fortunate enough to receive those organs and go on to live a happy life. And she ran, you know, she was the first person with a double transplant to run and complete a New York City marathon.
Oh, my God.
So she talks about, you know,
I just have trouble walking up the stairs, and you heard me breathe heavily before. How did she handle that?
You know, she lived a healthy lifestyle, and she said if she didn't live a healthy lifestyle, she probably wouldn't have had a successful recovery as she has had. And now she lives and she does all these things to promote organ and tissue donation. She's still very active in the community. I actually ran into her at a charity event for a charity that she supports, the Starlight Children's Foundation. And she's a wish-granting volunteer for that. And she's done that for years now, for at least over 10 years.
What I find amazing in her story is only 3 years after her operation did she complete that New York City Marathon.
Correct. It is amazing. But she did it to raise awareness, nothing more, no selfish reason. She wanted to raise awareness because she doesn't want someone to have to go through what she did. And she was literally on the brink of death. And God willing, she was, able to receive those organs she needed and have that operation. And now she talks about how grateful she is and how important it is to have that to people to want to give, their organs when the time comes.
Again, for the full hour, we're talking to Jerry Del Priore, my good friend, the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. And as a diabetic, Del Priore has not only triumphed over his own physical setback, but has gained inspiration from interviewing the athletes in Running Through Roadblocks. Don't go away. The award-winning On the Sidelines with Vinny Aceto and Jerry Del Priore continues after this.
Hi, I'm Adrian Benepe, New York City's Parks and Recreation Commissioner, encouraging you to volunteer in your local park or recreation center. Our parks and recreation centers keep New Yorkers healthy and happy. There are backyards, town commons, and community centers all rolled into one. All over the city, volunteers help us maintain and program our parks. Volunteering for parks is easy and fun. You can coach a sports team, plant a garden, tutor a student after school, organize an event, or just spend a few hours raking leaves. Everyone can pitch in at It's My Park Day, when New Yorkers gather in hundreds of neighborhoods to clean and green their local parks. To find out more about It's My Park Day and other volunteer opportunities at Parks and Recreation, visit the parks website at nyc.gov/parks or call 311.
This is WNYE New York.
Our son, Alan, was a combat medic.
One night in Iraq, his platoon came under heavy fire.
Without any regard for his safety, Alan left a covered position and rushed to the young wounded and was hit himself.
Critically wounded, Alan Babin will require daily care for the rest of his life. Paralyzed Veterans of America is here to help our injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned.
PVA is the voice of wounded veterans.
To support paralyzed veterans, visit pva.org.
Your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to New York Radio's only comprehensive program covering the New York City prep scene. The award-winning On the Sidelines with Vinny Aceto on WNYE 91.5 FM. The voice of high school sports in the Big Apple.
My good friend, Ernie Guarneri, former history teacher at Abraham Lincoln High School. Great guy. Today for the full hour, we're talking to Jerry Del Priore, who's the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. And Jerry, again, we've had a great time so far on this show, and you seem destined to write a book about athletes' triumphant battles against life's greatest challenges, because you have a battle yourself with diabetes.
Yes, I do. I was diagnosed at 12, and it was something, traumatic at that point. But educating and working with the doctors has, made it much easier to deal with. And it's always an ongoing process because they're always discovering new ways to deal with it, new ways to manage it. They have the insulin pump. I've considered even possibly maybe getting a transplant one day, which is, that's a serious operation. And you have to wait, you have to wait on a long, long list. And we talked about that with organ transplants and how important it is to people to consider signing the back of your driver's license and, donating your organs one day.
You felt as a youngster inspired by some of these stories, right, about yourself, and also that helped inspire you to become a writer that you are today.
It's interesting you say that, because I was sitting in college one day, and before the professor started lecturing, I got to the class, and I was always, you know, always as a kid, always reading the sports pages, you know, and before there was the internet, you know, there was only...
Oh, I know about that.
You know, there's only the newspaper.
Right.
I remember even going back as far as getting scores, there was no internet, there was no Blackberries, there was no...
There was sports phone. I used to work at sports phone.
That's what I was saying. Sports phone was a big thing, and, you know, that's how I got my...
976-1313. I got that number embedded in my brain.
If you grew up like when we grew up, that's something you relied on. Anyway, I remember sitting in college and going through the newspaper one day, and I was, like, reading this story about how this pitcher pitched the United States to a win over Cuba in the Olympics. And, you know, that was interesting enough, but there was one thing that stood out. He was missing part of his arm, and he would switch his glove and to field, and he was just an amazing pitcher. And he went on to pitch for the Yankees. First it was the Angels, then he pitched for the Yankees, and his name is Jim Abbott.
Pitched a no-hitter?
Yeah, exactly, yes. And he was an amazing athlete. But people, all the reporters would ask him, isn't it tough to do it? He goes, but that's the only... He was born that way. That's
right.
The only way he knew, so it wasn't really that difficult for him. But he garnered a lot of headlines because of that particular disability, and he went on to have a great career and pitched, and he didn't let that stop him from having an excellent athletic career. He was a high school standout quarterback and obviously a great pitcher.
Great pitcher for the University of Michigan.
Exactly, yes, yes. He grew up in Flint, Michigan, which is a small town in Michigan, and he had an excellent career. What we perceive as...
That's amazing. So you'd say that Jim Abbott then motivated you to pursue your own dreams.
Yeah, definitely. I just remember, to this day, I remember the sitting. I remember the day. I remember what newspaper it was. It was New York Newsday, and just inspired me. And it was like, wow, you know, if this guy can do it, why can't anyone else do it? I mean, he didn't let it stop him from excelling in sports. And what people perceive as a major roadblock, a hindrance, an obstacle, was probably nothing. It's nothing to him. He goes out of his way to show kids that, listen, you can do it. I did it. You can do it.
Amazing. And now you cut your teeth in minor league sports and also in high school sports. Talk about that.
I covered 7 years of minor league hockey, and I'm happy to say that Brooklyn is going to get their own minor league hockey
team. I heard
team.
About that. They're going to play the New Aviators. Is that correct?
Yes, the Brooklyn Aces. I'm so excited. They'll start in November, and I'm sure they're happy that we're actually mentioning them. They can contact and thank me and give me season tickets if they like. I'm sure I'll bring you, Vinny. How do you like that?
I like that idea. I like to see that. I'm a big hockey fan.
Yes. Minor league sports is huge throughout the United States. We are lucky to live in such a huge media market that minor league sports and even college sports don't get the billing it does elsewhere. But minor league sports and college sports provide a huge income for some of these small towns. We don't have to rely on that. We have such a big major league sports scene here. But,
which I think sometimes, you know, the high school kids lose out because of that.
In Texas, high school football is king. A lot of people, yes.
Florida also.
Florida, yes. Huge. And what you do is try to give these high school athletes their equal billing, the equal time.
I think they work just as hard. And you know what? They're trying to make something for themselves as well. And some of them never go on to play professional. Some of them don't even go on to play at the college level. But they put in so much time, whether it's 1 year or 4 years at the high school level, that I do honestly believe that they deserve some kind of acknowledgement also. And to see sometimes that they don't get the acknowledgement in the papers really bothers me. And that's what On the Sidelines is all about here, Jerry. And thank you for letting me to get on the soapbox to talk about that. Let's talk more about running through roadblocks, inspirational stories of 20 courageous athletic warriors. Let's talk about a couple other people who are in this book. And let's talk about Randy Snow, who's medaled in 3 different Summer Paralympics. In 3 different sports, he's also captured 16 titles and 2 gold medals as a wheelchair tennis player. That's amazing.
Well, he's a phenomenal athlete, regardless of how he does it. And he's excelled in wheelchair basketball, wheelchair tennis, track and field. So he's arguably one of the greatest wheelchair athletes in sports, hands down. And he's, you know, used his event that led him to being paralyzed from the waist down to educate that, you know, we're not just people in wheelchairs, we're people. And we can succeed in any aspect of life, including sports.
Talk about meeting Randy Snow and having a conversation with him. And, you know, he was operating a front-end loader, a 1,000-pound bale of hay dislodged from its scoop and crushed down on Snow. He suffered 4 broken ribs, a punctured right lung, a compound fracture to his left arm, severely crushed his spine, which paralyzed him from the waist down, spent many months in a hospital rehabbing himself. What's some of the reaction when you talk to some of these athletes and these things happen to them? What's their first reaction?
The first reaction is, am I going to live? And after that is, like, how am I going to survive? What kind of life can I live out of?
And how about accepting the disability? How difficult is that for them sometimes?
We can only imagine that. That's something I can think about. How would I react to that? How would you react to that?
Not well, I'll tell you that right now.
It's not an easy thing to deal with something like that when it first happens. But after a while, they learn to listen. It's, you know, my body is my body. It's not easy to deal with it, but I got to make the best of it. We are all given a certain amount of cards in life. We're all dealt a certain amount. It's up to us to play that hand. Not life isn't easy. It is always imperfect. But from what happens from then and out is up to us. So if we want to wallow in pity, what is that going to do? I mean, it's not really going to make your life any better.
Right.
You're going to sit there. You can sit there and cry over spilt milk, or you can clean it up and get on with your life. And I've learned something through looking at through the eyes of these athletes that, yes, life is difficult, but we can make it easier by persevering and persisting, and we can learn from it. Like, you think back, like, oh my God, you know, I lost my job 2 years ago, but maybe that was a sign to move on and to get a better job. Now that happened, it forced me to tap into my inner reserves and get on with my life and make something better for myself. So these athletes are showing you that at that time, yes, it was difficult, but maybe it was a message to, like, I can affect other people's lives. I can make something better of myself, and I can show people that it's not the worst thing at that time.
Let's talk about seeing the situation through someone else's eyes. Here's a segue. Let's talk about Andy Parr, legally blind skier.
Well, I find that amazing because I cannot ski at all. I've tried skiing. I perfected the art of falling down and getting up. Yeah, I don't know about you, Vinny. Do you ski?
No. I have trouble walking.
Yeah, I don't think people in Brooklyn really ski.
No. Not enough snow here, thank God.
But if you think of how difficult it is, but to race down 60, 70 miles and have limited vision, it's just amazing. Now, granted, they use, like, guides to help them, but it's an amazing thing to do that, especially on something as skiing down. Not all these race courses are perfect, and to do that and to be able to do that well is amazing. I can't give credit to these different athletes that compete at the Paralympics. Now, and I'm not sure if everyone knows what the Paralympics are, but they take place in conjunction with the Olympics 2 weeks after the games for the physically challenged. They're not like the Special Olympics. They're different in a sense. The Paralympics is a high-level competition for athletes with physical disabilities. It's not easy. It's cutthroat competition. And compete in the same events, or most of the same events, as the Olympics, as the Olympians do.
Let's talk about one last person in the book here, and that's Kelly Sutton. We all know about the Danica Patrick. She's the big new thing in auto racing. But let's talk about Kelly Sutton in the competing in the male-dominated sport of race car driving. And it's difficult as it is just being a race car driver. And here she is in a male-dominated sport with multiple sclerosis, which is a potentially debilitating autoimmune disease that attacks the central nervous system, which is the brain and spinal cord, and it affects motor skills. Talk about meeting Kelly Sutton and her situation.
Well, I can't say enough how inspirational she is. She's been able to have a successful race car driving career despite having multiple sclerosis. And she's very grateful to do that and to show people that if you have something like multiple sclerosis, it shouldn't stop you from achieving success in life, in any sport, in any aspect of your life. And she's very inspirational. She's a great race car driver. She does it like you said, in a male-dominated sport of auto racing. However, she hasn't let it stop her from succeeding. And, you know, she continues to earn a great living as a race car driver, also to inspire other people to, you know, pursue their own dreams. And, you know, race car driving, many people, it's not as big as in New York City, but they're trying to actually get a track, a NASCAR-sanctioned track in Staten Island.
Right.
They've been doing that for years. The people of Staten Island don't want to have that, but it's only probably only be 3 or 4 races a year. But they're worried about the traffic, and, you know, New York City already has enough traffic. But it's a great sport. It's an acquired taste.
Right.
You know, you have to, like, really know about it. And it's one of these sports that you probably have to attend live to really enjoy it. Because I hear a lot of fans talk about it. It's like there's nothing about, like, the speed they
go. I can't get into this NASCAR, but you know what? There are 2 races I watch every year. I have to make sure that I'm at home and I actually watch every second of it. It's the Indianapolis 500. I've been watching it since I was a little kid when they used to show it on tape at 9 o'clock at night on ABC with Jim McKay hosting it. And I also watch the Grand Prix of Monte Carlo. Don't ask me why. It's just that road course at Monte Carlo, and maybe because all the beautiful people were there watching that. I'm always there watching that. Finally, again, Jerry, let's talk about the running through roadblocks, inspirational stories of 20 courageous athletic warriors. How do people, if they're interested in this book, how do they go about getting it?
They can go to Amazon, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and even Borders.com. You can order it through there. You can type in "running through a roadblock" and it will appear, or you can use my name and, you know, type that in, and my book will show up. And also, you can contact me directly if you like a special autographed copy at JerryDelPriore.com. That's JerryDelPriore.com.
And it's published by Fledgling Books, a Bedazzled Inc. publishing company.
I also, you know, my experience with special needs children, I also, you know, plan on going to schools and doing presentations, and, you know, I love working with kids. So if there's anyone out there that's interested, you can contact me through my website, which is www.jerrydelpriore.com, and you can find the contact information on that on my website.
Again, we've been talking to Jerry Del Priore, the author of Running Through Roadblocks, Inspirational Stories of 20 Courageous Athletic Warriors. And Del Priore puts it simply this way: when life constructs a roadblock, lower your head and blast through the barriers that are obstructing your path toward a happy life. Jerry, thank you so much for being a part of our program today, and good luck with this Running Through Roadblocks.
Thank you for having me, Vinny. I love being on this show. I love listening to it. I hope you get as many listeners as you can, and, you know, you're a big supporter of high school sports, and it's been great to be back on this show.
Thanks, Jerry. For everyone at Radio NYC, I'm Vinny Aceto, reminding you to be a part of the game. Get off the bench, and I'll see you on the sidelines. Goodbye.
porch and a gravel road. And that's home to me. Feels like home to me. I feel no shame. I'm proud of where I came from. I was born and raised in the Birdland. One thing I know, no matter where I go, I keep my heart and soul in the Birdland. I keep my heart and soul in the Birdland.
You get a line, I get a pole. We'll go fishing in the crawfish hole. Five-card poker on Saturday night. Church on Sunday morning.
You get a line, I get a pole.
We'll go fishing in the crawfish
hole.
Five-card poker on Saturday night. Church on Sunday morning.
You get a line,
I get a pole. We'll go fishing in the crawfish hole.
Five-card
poker on Saturday night. Church on Sunday morning.
There are people that we legitimately have to thank. And one guy who really promotes PSAL events, and that's Vinny Aceto, who does a great job on the radio. Vinny, thank you.